Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Office Hours for December. This is our first Office Hours where we've invited everyone, and we have hundreds of you who signed up today. This used to be just for members. Some of you will know, because you were members, that I got rid of membership at Asking Matters, and I now have this cool insiders group, which I hope you'll think about joining, and you'll get my Monday Morning Matters every day and such. But I've opened up Office Hours to everyone so that I can share this content much more broadly. And I'm really delighted you're here with me today. I'm speaking to you from California, and I'm very lucky to be out here where it's beautiful, because I know it's not so hot back in New Jersey. I'd love for you to type in the questions box your position and where you are listening in from today. Are you a director of development trying to make an asking plan, executive director, board member, a major gift officer, other staff? And where are you listening in from today? If you could type that in the questions box, that would be great. Always like to know who we have here. And I'm gonna read through some of them. Great, we've got Heather's a CEO. We've got a leadership gift officer, wonderful. When I hear that, I think you've got a pretty good staff, Anna. Pat is the director of development. Ruth, glad, always great to see you here, Ruth. Glad, thanks for joining. Amanda's a director of advancement. Rhonda's a development manager. Joel is a major gift officer. Great. So we're going to talk about how much time we have for major gifts, because I know many of you represent smaller shops, and I do a lot of work with smaller shops where there is no major gift officer. We'll talk about that more, but it's great when there is one, such as Joel in Wayne, Indiana. And great, we've got a board member, Elaine. Thank you, Elaine, for joining us. We all need you, our board members. As a matter of fact, we're gonna talk a lot about board members and involving them in this work, this asking, which is really cultivating and asking. So wonderful that you have joined us as well. I can't read all of these, but I certainly will go back and do so. And of course, I always love the fact that we've got people from all over on. So I am a big believer in making plans. And I think that's because I hope most of you, if not all of you, know what your asking style is, because that's at the core of Asking Matters. So if you've ever done anything with us, you know your asking style is. A matter of fact, if you want to type it in the questions box, I'd love to know what your primary style is, if you know that. Mine is Kindred Spirit. My secondary is Mission Controller. And I mention that because it's my Mission Controller that comes through at a time like this. My Mission Controller says, okay, we've got to be systematic and methodical. We've got Ruth and Haley and Michelle, our Mission Controllers, a bunch of Mission Controllers on today. Heather, go-getter. You know, I think of this, well, what's going to drive each of us to make one of these plans? The Rainmaker is very goal-oriented and knows, okay, if I'm going to reach my goals, I've got to have a plan, right? I can't do without a plan. The go-getter is really interested in the big picture, wants to wing it. Heather, I'm sure you've got this feeling like it would be nice to just wing it, but you know that if you're going to make that big picture happen, that you have to have a plan. The kindred spirit is going to know, is going to feel guilty if we don't make a plan. And the mission controller is going to love making the plan. So as we look at our team and we look at building an asking plan, one of the things we can do is we can partner with people, right? Because some people are better at some things than others. And maybe if you're not on the analytics side, then you can partner with someone who's got more of that and can help bring this plan together. By the way, I know someone said they had a problem with
Brian. I'm sorry to cut in here, but I'm also seeing that you're still on the will start shortly slide on my end. I don't know if
that
that's
is
for
strange.
Everyone. It does not
that
seem
is strange.
That slides are okay. Yep, there
They're
we
not,
go. Nope, there it is.
It is there. Okay. Well,
now
we only missed.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know why that didn't happen, but besides let's see what you missed. Let me say that, and I think I say this every time. We love technology. This is my motto, and I still think I should put this on mugs and t-shirts and sell it. And that is that we love technology until we hate it. Because here it is, my system saying I'm presenting, my slides are moving, and what's happening, we don't know. So this is my mug. You see it live. That's my mug. And then I put up this slide with the asking style. So let me make sure everyone did see that when we were talking about the asking style. If anyone's new and doesn't know their asking style, go to askingmatters.com or quiz.askingmatters.com. It takes 2 minutes. It's 30 questions. You'll get a lot of information, and it'll really help you as it's helped more than 100,000 people who have taken that quiz. So I want to make sure that when we're talking about asking plans, we're talking about our major donors, because we can't make a plan, an individual plan for everyone. Right? There's not enough time, there's not enough money. Even if you're a major gift officer, as Joel is, you still have a limited portfolio. So we have to set a threshold for a major gift. Now, sometimes you hear major gift at a university, and it's like, oh, it's got to be $25,000, $50,000. I think a major gift is any gift worth the time to cultivate and solicit. And we're going to talk about how much time that takes. So type in for me if you have it, what's a major gift for you? What's a major gift for you at your organization? Is it 1,000, 2,500, 5,000, 10,000? I'm seeing 5,000, 5,000 and up, 5,000. I'm seeing a lot of 5,000s. And I think for most organizations, that's a really good range. Haley's saying over 10, Courtney 10. I've always felt actually with the higher ranges that it probably would pay, if you could make the case, to have another major gift, a major gift officer or another one, if you have that many people that you're setting your threshold at 10. Because if you've got someone out there getting $5,000 gifts, they have to more than pay for their salary and benefits and such over the course of the year if they're really going out and doing the work. I see some of you at 1,000, and generally I try to boost that over time because if you're a smaller organization, $100,000, $250,000 organization, that might really help, but it's going to be hard to get to 500,000 or 1 million and do more of the work you want to do unless you bump that number up a bit. So I often see the sweet spot, at least for small organizations, at 2,500, 5,000. And once we talk about how much time it really takes, you'll get a sense of where that threshold needs to be for you. There's an acronym, I didn't make it up, SMART, that any plan has to be specific, measurable, agreed to, realistic, and time specific, right? So objectives need to be clear, results measurable. How do we know that we reached it? Of course, for rainmakers, this is really important, but we all need to have a quantifiable sense if we reached our goals. We have to have agreement. We can't just assign people. This is particularly true for board members, and we'll be talking about them. Realistic, right? I mean, let's be realistic, but push, and time specific. I'm big on deadlines. And one of the bonus materials I'm going to give you is a detailed fundraising plan. The last one I built actually with the names changed to protect the innocent and the guilty. And you'll see what I put into a plan. And some of it you won't need, some of it'll be too detailed, but what's so important, you'll see that laid out for you. So here's an example, right? Specific. And I'm going to talk a lot about boards because I'm doing a ton of work with them. Some of you have heard about the new product I'm releasing, Board Fundraising Pro. We all have a board. If we're a small or mid-sized organization, we need their help. And we have to get, we have, but we have to ask them to help in the right way and do it the right way. So let's say, here's a specific one to get 75% of your board to help with fundraising. How do you measure it? Well, the idea is for each board member to cultivate three people during the year. And maybe we say they each have to have four or six touches, and we'll get to that in a minute. They have to agree to it. I don't like to
Brian,
just assign them. Yes.
I'm sorry to cut back in, but I think your slides are still not advancing because
Wow.
we're stuck on the major donors slide.
Okay.
And
Tell me
now,
if
yep, okay, yep, there
Okay.
we're good now. I'm not sure what you need
Wow.
to do to make
Okay.
that happen.
You know what? I don't I wish I knew, Kyle. I clicked
Yep.
on the control button. You
I
have to
know
understand,
that's
guys, for those of you new to
how
me, I've done 800 webinars, so I know how to use GoToWebinar, but sometimes it's wonky. I'm going to see about maybe not using my clicker and just clicking on the screen because that might be toggling something. We'll see.
I think that's what needs to
Okay,
happen.
we'll see. So
Okay,
now
thank
you
you.
can see specific, measurable, agree to realistic, time specific, and here are examples of each of them. And I am a big believer you have to agree. That board members need to agree to do the work. I hate just saying, you do this, you do this. I want them to be part of the solution. Realistic, I'm not, I have no, I never assume all board members will ask. I want them to be part of this process and time specific. Of course, we have to have it done by a certain time. Kyle, let me know if I'm advancing now and we're seeing a time slide. If not, let me know immediately. So the big issue is finding the time.
No,
And I
we're
always,
still on
wow.
the smart sled, and now we're on the time sled.
There's a wonky thing here, and now I know what to do. I'll just do it each time.
Yeah,
So
okay, thank you.
finding the time is really important. And it really, because it's time and money for each of our prospects, right? We have to for each prospect, we need to find the time to visit with them. We need to come up with communications. We have discussions about what's the right strategy. And we have, on average, two meetings a year. So let me say that for everyone, this will be different over time. When we're building plans for the first time and we don't have something to go back on, and often this information isn't in a plan, this is where I start. You might find that you're more efficient over time or less efficient, and you can work from there. But here's my starting point whenever I'm helping an organization do more major gift work and be more intentional about their asking. I've been 3,500 meetings in my life, maybe more, and I have found that on average, well, they're anywhere from, a few hours if they're virtual, or if you can just run and meet someone nearby or they're coming to the office, to 10 or 11 hours. Now, of course, if you're a regional fundraiser and you have to fly to another city, as I did with one of my jobs, it's going to take more time, right, to go see people. But assuming that you're getting in a car and everyone's within an hour or two in your who you're going to see regularly, that those meetings are going to take anywhere from 2 or 3 to 10 or 11. So I use an average of 6 hours per meeting, two meetings a year. And of course there's other time, but I average it out at 12 hours per prospect a year. 12 hours per prospect. And over the years, it's just averaged out to that for me when I look back and I see the type of work I've done and how much time it's taken. And this is really important. It's a little wonky quantifiable, but this will help you set your goals correctly and do the right amount of cultivation and asking. So let's say you've got 4 hours a week. Actually, I'd love you to type in. Obviously, I keep using Joel as our example because I saw a major gift officer. He's doing this work all day, every day. How many hours a week do you have for major gifts? Do you have your, we have CEOs here, executive directors. How many hours do you have? Two? How many hours do you have? Directors of development, how many hours do you have? Heather is saying 8. That's great. How many? And Heather, let's see, 2 from Dwight, 5 from Jenny. Hi, Jenny. 4 from Mike. We all have a different range, right? So based on how many we have, Sarah's an ED, she's saying 2 to 3. We can only do so much. If we have 4 hours a week, like Mike does, that's 192 hours a year, assuming 4 weeks off, right? You figure out for yourself. That's 16 prospects, 16 active prospects. You could have some other people on the back burner that you're not seeing, but overall, 16. Now, remember, some of them you'll see only once, a few of them you might see 3 times. I try to see people at least twice. Once to do some in-person one-on-one cultivation and once to solicit them. Now, some of these numbers might be getting better for you because the numbers, it might be taking less time because we're doing more video chatting and video solicitation, or at least video cultivation. So as I said, over time, you might find that you're more efficient. But I say start with 12 hours per prospect and figure out what you have. So Elizabeth, you say you've got 2 hours. Dwight, you've got 2 hours. You're only going to have 8. So if you only have 8, then how many hours is everyone else giving you? And that's why we're going to talk about the board chiming in. But if you're the only person, if you're an ED and you don't have a development staff, then maybe you only have the 2 plus the board, right? So one of the things to do is to figure out all the people in your organization, how much time they have per week, per month, and then you have an idea of where you can be. Now, you might find if you set, for those of you who set, well, wherever you set your threshold for major gift, you might find you can't get to all the people all the way down to 1,000 or to 5,000. Because we always want to start at the top with the biggest gifts that are going to make the biggest difference. There are some exceptions, as with everything. You have people who are important in another way. But generally, we want to be looking at our biggest donors. So we want to make sure we're leaving the time for them. It's a really important point. Have we left enough time for the people from the top down? How far down the list can we get, given the time we have? So very important to this is the board's role. I could ask, who here is very satisfied with the role their board is playing in fundraising these days? And I'm sure that we wouldn't get a lot of people saying yes. It is a very hard thing to do, but it is a very important thing. I want to ask a question here because it'll give me an idea of the size of your organization. How many full-time development people do you have at your organization? How many full-time development people do you have? None. Let's see. 2, Sarah, 5, Courtney, that's a nice big group. Becky, none. Laura, 3, Beth, 0, Elizabeth, 0. Joel, 6, I assume that you'd probably be among the largest. Since you're a major gift officer, that generally means a number of people. Dwight, just me, he's the director. We have a bunch of you. Jen says, me, myself, and I. My first job as executive director, I was chief cook, bottle washer, if that's the expression. So it was, for those of us who have no development staff or even one, we really need our board. We really need our board. So I want to go into that a little bit and what the challenges are. So part of the problem is how we approach the board. We need the board, but we often tend to use the board for transactional fundraising. What I mean by that is we're having a benefit. We say we need every board member to fill a table. The board members fill a table, and then all their friends ask them to go to their events, and they're swapping gifts. I call it quid pro quo fundraising. Or you say, we need your list, and you send a letter to someone's whole list, an end of year appeal, and then again, they're getting hit up by their friends. And it feels like sales to them, and they're right. They're worried about stepping on relationships and damaging them. They fear rejection, especially from these people who they're so close to, who may or may not want to help. Many fear that reciprocity, the quid pro quo, and they don't know what to do. So we're setting them up for failure. And as importantly, they don't know how to fundraise. We make this assumption that they do. I'd like to know I think I have a poll on this. I'm going to put a poll up. So I'd love to know, hold on one sec while I launch this. How many hours in the last 2 years how much fundraising training has your board had in the last 2 years? How much board training have they had? I'll give you maybe 10 more seconds. Just choose one of the options that seems closest and we'll share it. We've got about half of you so far. And let's see, 2 more seconds. Great, I'm gonna close the poll and share the results. So not surprisingly, more than half of you, none. 28% under 3 hours, 10% of you 4 to 6, which is good, and 8% more than 6 hours, which is fantastic. And I really applaud you for doing that, because we can't get our board members involved the way we want them in what I call a strategic relationship building fundraising without training. We can get them to do this awful work of asking their friends and family to support their organization because of them, but we can't. But that's transactional, and every year we're going back to the well. We need our board members to help us with the strategic long-term fundraising. I say I like to refer to my board members as mini major gift officers, because look at the time many of you had, 2 hours a week, 3 hours a week. Now think of the difference if you have 15 board members, let's say, and each board member will give you even 2 hours a month, 24 extra hours a year. 24 by 15 is 360 hours. That is 30 more prospects. So you either have your 2 hours a week, which is 8, or you have all the board's help, which together can be really helpful if they're dealing with strategic relationship-oriented gifts. And I say this because I believe individuals are the best. This is why I spend my whole life, focused on these bigger gifts and teaching people how to do them, because we as individuals are the best donors. Here's a question for you. I love asking. I ask it when I do it, and whenever I do board training, so that board members will understand why this is so important. What's the longest number of consecutive years you've made a gift to an organization? And I will start by saying I graduated from college in 1984. That's 38 years ago. And I've made a gift for 38 years because I'm really loyal to my school. What's the longest number of years? Heather's saying 12. Type that in the box. How many are we seeing? 40 for Dwight. Go, Dwight. 23 from Beth. Dwight, tell me, what organization is it for the 40? Who have you been supporting for 40 years? Let me know. Beth, 23. Ruth, 10. Cynthia, 12. 35 for Sarah. 15 for Rhonda. Dwight, Bethesda Church. It's always a place of worship, a school, or a medical organization that's made an impact in your family. Sarah, church. I say this because that's the type of donor we want. And that is only going to happen with asking plans. It's not going to happen if we just keep doing the special events and having our board members hit up everyone. It's not going to happen just through letter appeals, though we will give through letter appeals. But if we want the larger gifts that we give to the organizations we care about most, we need our board members to help us build those relationships. And we need to teach them how to do it, right? Jenny says to her sorority, right? We all have something like that. So we need to train the board. Many of you have seen some form of the donor cycle. Our goal is to have our board members involved in every step of the cycle. Often, when we're taught, we're so focused on the money and the ask, which is the hardest thing for board members to do, and something many board members will never do well. But we need our board members all year to cultivate our donors. We need them to educate them about the work we're doing, involve them as best they can. Well, would you join me on a committee of the board? Would you join me on this committee for the special event? Would you join me in a focus group? Would you come do hands-on volunteer work? We need them to ask, we're going to talk about this, for all sorts of things besides money, to thank them for gifts. The recognizing often is done by the organization generally. So when we're setting out these plans, we want to ask our board, we want everyone to be involved in asking for something. Right? There are so many things. You can ask your board members, invite someone to sit down and have a cup of coffee with you. Invite a donor to come visit our programs and take a tour. Ask your donor for advice if there's something we're wrestling with, and this donor is a marketing expert or a real estate expert or a legal person, and there's something the board's wrestling with. Who do you know who's a donor? Or can you have that conversation? Send updates. Personal updates. One of the things I love to ask people to do and put in their asking plans is when you come out of a board meeting, have your board members send an email personalized to each of the donors on their radar screen, asking them, telling them about something amazing that happened in the board meeting. It takes 2 or 3 minutes per, and these are really important touches, right? Inviting them to cultivation events. And then in terms of asking, there's so many things to ask for, as I noted, besides money, and they're all important parts of the asking process. They're important parts of cultivating our donors and bringing them closer to the organization. So they're an important part of your asking plan. Asking for advice, asking for in-kind services or products, depending on what they do for a living and what their connections are, sitting on a board. Many of these are both involved, are involvement and education and asks. So you can see where they overlap. And the asking plan needs to be specific about which of these steps we're going to take for each of our donors. But truly, everyone should not be asking for gifts on the board. And I do think today, in most of our organizations, if our board members can help with all the other pieces in the asking plan, all the other pieces in this donor cultivation, that the staff can ask for the gift. Maybe the staff bring that board member, or two board members go together in some cases. But I think board members can do almost all this work on their own, and then we worry about the ask itself. Even in an asking meeting, one of the things I teach for those of you who've gone through the arc of the ask with me and things like that is that the ask is only a teeny piece, even of the meeting. And yes, it's important, and yes, it can make us nervous. It still makes me nervous. But the meeting is about so much more than that, and the relationship is as well. And board members can really shine in so much of that. So, what are some of the goals we could set? And if you have any questions, let me see if there anything came up, by the way, in the scroll here. Pat asked if the amount of full-time staff includes administration. And I'm sorry I didn't get to answer it, but it would. So if you have a larger office, you have 6 or 7, you might have a full-time administrative person. I also had a question, will we get a PDF? You might have come on a little late, Jenny, but you will get a PDF of the slides, and then you get links to both this video recording and an audio and MP3 if you want to listen to it. And I'm about after goals, we're going to talk about some of the a few bonus materials I'm going to send as well. So, what are your goals, right? What are some goals? And we talk about them being concrete and such, right? SMART, specific, measurable, agreed to, reasonable, time with a timeline. Donor meetings, maybe it's increasing the number of meetings. Because truthfully, that's a fabulous metric. I'm working with an organization that's trying to come up with metrics, and I'm saying, for me, it's about quality meetings, quality touches. Those will lead to gifts. So I want my asking plan to quantify the number of touches. And I always talk about 6 touches with a donor a year, at least 2 of which are a meeting. Some people say they want 8 or more. There are always going to be these other touches, general newsletters and things like that. But 6 times, at least every other month, where we're reaching out in a personal way. Increased board and volunteer participation, maybe from 25% to 50%. Maybe it's improving our success rate if you're really having problems, and what can you do to improve it? Could be training. Donor communications. Maybe it's increasing the average number of touch points. Maybe it's better customizing donor communications. And as I said, you will get the slides. So I just want to show you these are various goals that can be part of our asking plan. I hate fundraising events because I'm an introvert, because I have all these people in the room and I can't cater to them at once, because my fellow introverts aren't going to go to the event for all these reasons. Those of you who know me well know I'm not an events person. But I am a big cultivation events person. Smaller events, tours of your facility, little gatherings in people's homes, a chance to hear a speaker who's related to the work you're doing, a chance here from a participant or program director. So maybe part of your asking plan is quantifying the number of cultivation events, or the increase the number of donors participating, which could happen by asking our board members to invite those contacts of theirs, the people that they're helping to steward. Right, if every board member invites one person. And by the way, some board members have their own contacts, great. But if board members don't have their own, every one of us has, I am sure, people we can't spend enough time on because it takes 12 hours per person. We only have 2 hours a week, whatever. So having board members help us with the donors and prospects we already have is always as valid as asking them to bring new people to the table. Unless you're a new organization, you really don't have a lot of prospects, but virtually every organization I have worked with had enough prospects and not enough time. Board training, big one. Maybe it's holding a fundraising retreat. Maybe it's working with a certain number of board members individually on their donors, involving a certain number in solicitations, trying to move towards board members being more involved in that. And absolutely, one of the things I push whenever I train, and it's one of the reasons I've built this new product, is that it's not just a one-time thing to train your board, because training is about practice. Training is about reinforcing ideas all the time. We never learn everything at once. So part of your plan, if we're trying to get our board members to be more involved in the asking, would be to do some sort of training, some exercise at each board meeting. You might have to go back to governance. And again, I'm spending a lot of time on boards in the asking plans because that's the way to get more bang for the buck at almost every organization. You might be reviewing and updating job descriptions so they're clear about this function. It might start with first soliciting your board individually and in person. Let me ask you, how many of you have a process where each board member is solicited for their support individually, face-to-face each year, and asked for an exact amount? You have a board member, last year, for the last 3 years, you've given 5,000, would you give 10,000 this year? Who here is actually doing that with everyone? Let me know if you are, type that in. And I have a question from Christy, co from Fiverr, great organization I've worked with. Do you have suggestions on how best to assign board members to cultivate individuals from our existing list? We attempted the strategy, but got stuck in the implementation phase. It's a great question, Christy. I always start by circulating lists of donors to board members and asking them for feedback. I limit those lists to what fits on one good page. It could be 40 or 50 in an Excel spreadsheet. And I have just a few columns. How well do you know them? I think, I'm not sure if I have that material noted here, but I will send out my prospect selection chart as well. Kyle, if you can make a note of that, we'll send that to everyone. But trying to get a little bit more information from board members, first to see who they know, how comfortable they are, right? Some of them will take someone to coffee, but won't solicit them. Someone will, right? It depends on the relationship. Then I look, so I make those intersections and connections. Then I look at everyone else who needs help. Everyone about my donors who needs more attention. And it could be that I assign them based on they have similar work, there's similar points in their lives, they live near each other. It could be based on some sort of information I know about them. And that's how I try to assign them. I try to start when I'm involving board members, the best way to start with them building a new relationship with one of our donors is a thank you, right? Starting with a thank you for a gift opens the door, and then the donor knows this board member. And I want my board members to stick with specific prospects, just like my major gift officers would. So once there's that one connection, then I try to have the board member continue that connection ongoing, because that's where we get the economy of scale and we start to build those relationships. But I always start by sharing lists and asking people for who they know and how they know them. And then I merge that with where my greatest need is. So I hope that answers that. It takes work. And that's why you want your board members involved at the right level, because this isn't easy. We need them. They can make an impact, but they need to be involved at the right level and in the right way in order to make it worthwhile. Let's see, Dwight, we've only asked them once. Wendy, no, but we have 100% giving. Reeve, we're moving our board to the fundraising board and wondering how to get them to prioritize capacity and interest in fundraising for new potential members. How to get them to prioritize capacity, to prioritize, to prioritize the larger donors and the ones with interest. Well, I think you need to share with them that everyone's not going to be our donor just because they have a lot of money. There's a tendency to look at the wealthiest people around you or the people you know the best. So one of the exercises I do with boards is I list all the different networks people have: family, friends, coworkers, co-parishioners, parents of my kids' friends, fellow alums, people I'm connected to on social media, and so forth. And I say, think of all these networks. Don't think of just the person you know best who you can lean on. Think of the person you know who might be most aligned with the work we're doing. And I set that major gift threshold. And I say, if you don't know anyone who you think over time would give at our threshold of $2,500 or $5,000, then let's just deal with the organization's donors. Don't bother with yours. I don't want you asking your friends for $250 when we have a $3 million organization. I'd rather you work with me on this $5,000 donor, right? So I try and show them that strategic way and to help them understand, because oftentimes we've been doing bad fundraising and we have been asking them to hit up everyone they know and look at the wealthiest people they know. We need to pull back from that. So I hope that, Ari, that makes some sense. And if you have a follow-up question, just ask me. Rachel said our board members are recruited with a promise that there isn't a give or get. Yikes. And if they don't want to fundraise, they don't have to. Okay, well, that is, okay, well, I'm not saying your last name, sorry. Oops. But that's really unfortunate. You can't get anywhere if that's the case. Your board job description must clearly say, and my best practice is to do your best, that we need you to make a personally significant gift, which you see here on the screen, personally significant, and help in fundraising the best you can. I don't like quantitative because, and I could get into that in another, I would get into that in another webinar, but I think the best is to say we ask you to do something that's personally significant. You might even describe that. We want to be one of your top charities. We want the gift to really represent how much you care about us and so forth, and to do your best in fundraising, and then to explain what that means, which is what we've been talking about. And that would be very helpful. And in terms of Reeve asking, how do we get board members to understand we need new board members that have capacity to give and such? I do think it's the board's role to find other board members. However, it often falls to staff. So I think we have to, how do we get them to understand that? I'm assuming, Reeve, that you're staff. One of our challenges is we as staff, we're trying to send those messages up. We're trying to manage up. And we need a few board members who believe and will manage themselves. If it's not the chair, it has to be the head of the governance committee or the head of the fundraising committee or the head of finance. Someone who says to everyone around the table, we really need to up our game. You know, the staff is doing what it can on earned income and on government grants and this and that. The big area for us is individuals. Individuals have tons of money. Here's what the statistics say. We need to help us find new people. We need you to go to bat. We need you to give a personally significant gift and help us fundraise. And that those messages best come either from fellow board members, or from some outside consultant, but not from the staff. It's really hard for the board to hear it, and it's hard for the staff to manage up to that. So let's move on to one more set of goals. I think this is the last one, and that is just giving goals, right? Number one set of threshold for major gifts if you don't have one, right? That could be a good goal in your asking plan so that you're asking at the right level. It could be increasing the total number of dollars, the number of donors. Maybe you're increasing giving for a percentage. Everyone doesn't increase their gift every year. Maybe you want to get 25% of all your donors. That's a goal, and see if that's doable, if you come close. So, some tools. So the first thing is, I'm going to send you this massive detailed plan, and you can just, it'll be a Word document. You don't have to recreate the wheel. You can just copy and paste what you want, but you'll see that you'll see in that I start with the organization's goals and strategies, and then I see what pertains to fundraising and what fundraising can do. This one actually has communications in it as well. That's often rolled into one department. And for each task or each goal or strategy, whatever it is, I describe why, who's going to do it, what's going to be done, and by when. Smaller organizations, some of this might be overwhelming for you, but to the extent you can lay it out, there's something to go back and measure against. The second piece is a tracker. I happen to use an Excel spreadsheet. I think when you're talking about major gifts, for me, the best thing is to have a piece of paper in front of me which I can keep track of at all times. I find most of the CRMs can be challenging on this front, where I'm trying to put in data, run reports all the time. I like to have a sheet with my significant donors, the people I'm really focused on, right in front of me. And the most important piece in any tracker is, what's your next step? When's it going to be done? So part of your asking plan is making sure you have a tool like this, and probably trying to fill in as much as you can early on. Questions. We are near the end. If you have questions, let's see, Wendy's got one. Why don't you type in your questions? And while you're doing that, I want to share with you everything that's coming up. So I've talked, and if you're on the mailing list, most of you probably are, you know, I've got this product. I am so excited about this, because I go out and do these trainings. I've done a training for Christy. I've done a training for a bunch of people who are on today. And then I leave, and it's like, now what do you do? And for years, directors of development and others have been saying, I need something that helps me ongoing. That's the idea. You'll get a lot more detail on it. It's going to go on sale January 3rd. I'm working on a video to show you what it's about that's going to come out, I hope, this week. There's going to be a webinar on it. So anyone who's trying to get their board to do more work in 2023 and wants to do some training and needs some ongoing help, this could be a really cool help for it. On the 25th, I'm doing for Charity How To. That's a paid webinar, but we will promote it in our January newsletter. It's called Major Gifts in 2 Hours a Week. So it goes into a lot more detail on the information I have here about how you can start doing this work if you haven't done it, even if you only have 2 hours a week. You might want to participate in that. And on the 26th, we have a free webinar. We continue our Fundraising Masters series with Tony Martinetti, a dear peer of mine who is a plan giving master. And he's going to do a plan giving 101, because it's another area where there's so much low-hanging fruit and so much wealth transfer coming in the next couple of years, and I want every organization to be part of it where they can. So so let's see, Wendy had a question. As a 50-year-old organization, our donors have aged and many have passed away, and I'm assuming, and not to be too whatever, that we didn't have planned giving in place. While several left large estate gifts, that's great, over the past few years, we're left with very few 80-plus-year-old donors. So in effect, we're starting over. What's the best way to cultivate a new generation of donors? You mean a new generation from scratch, or for planned gifts? I mean, if you I've seen organizations that have this big gap. They did really well ages ago, and somehow that work stopped. And so there's no pipeline anymore. If the pipeline is about you've got younger donors who are trying to get into planned giving, definitely come to Tony's webinar on January 26th, which I said is free. If it's about trying to build a donor base, that is a hard thing to do without some social media today, without a bunch of cultivation events, without getting the people you know to invite other people and to try to spread the word. It's pretty grassroots unless you're a very large, well-funded organization, because most of what you can do has to be free. Not an easy lift. I could always talk to you a little bit more about it offline, Wendy. Dwight, thank you for your feedback. I appreciate it. Amanda, someone referred me to your webinar. I loved it. Very helpful. Oh, I'm delighted. Thank you. Thank you all. This is not easy work. And I know from having done it my whole life, and I really appreciate all my fellow fundraisers who are out there trying to do this. I think fundraising is difficult, the most difficult thing in the organization. And this piece, this asking, is the hardest. I'm not trying to say grants and special events and all those things are easy, but because this is so personal and involves building relationships and is so time consuming for each donor, it's really hard work, but it's important work because there's so much money out there and these gifts will really make your organizations fly. So thank you for joining me. Thanks for being in the field and raising money. And I wish you all the best. I hope you have safe, wonderful holidays and that we'll see you in the new year. Have a great afternoon. Thank you.